Right, so the city of Kerala hosts pilgrims mourning the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam. Lebanon's Hezbollah leader says that resistance will continue until the demise of the Israeli regime, which he says is close. And train disruptions in the UK, workers of the railway network go on a strike to demand better pay. And everyone from Tehran, welcome. Now, millions of people from across the world have flocked to the Iraqi city of Karbala to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Mourners gathered at the shrine of the third Shia Imam to pay tribute to him on the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram. The day known as Ashura is when the Imam and 72 of his companions were martyred in a battle with the army of the tyrant of that time. The battle took place on the plains of Karbala in 680 AD. It serves as an eternal reminder of the fight against oppression and injustice. Ashura has been marked every year since some 14 centuries ago. Some countries, including Iran, commemorated the day on Friday this year.
People from all walks of life, young and old, clad in black, out on the streets taking part in mourning processions. During the first 10 days of the Islamic month of Muharram, culminating in Tasua and Ashura, eulogists recite the events of the Battle of Karbala, and Islamic scholars elaborate on the underlying message of Imam Hussein's stance against tyranny. Tasua is the ninth day of the lunar month of Muharram. It is considered a very important religious occasion as Muslims worldwide commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Ashura, which literally means the 10th of Muharram, is the day Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his 72 companions were martyred in the Battle of Karbala in southern Iraq in 680 AD, as they fought courageously for justice against the much larger army of the Umayyad Caliph, Yazid I. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is a hero that transcends time. His goodness makes him a moral example for all human beings worldwide, and foreign students at Tehran University have not missed the chance to mourn for the much revered Imam along with the entire Iranian nation.
We all gather here, irrespective of religion. We here in our Hayat, a lot of students who belongs to the different sects like Ahl Sunnah and other sects as well, they work for the love of Imam Hussein.
The very popular phrase, Hubbul Hussein Yajma'ana, this is the actual meaning of it, that everyone from around the world, no matter of their background, can come together and commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein for one message. The message of Islam, the message of the grandfather Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Participating in Hayat means like propagating the message of Imam Hussein, which is justice and unity.
Tearful mourners take part in rituals while educating the younger generation about the sufferings of Imam Hussein. The processions continue until noon. After the prayers, people line up for lunch. Many people consider it an honor to serve the lovers of Imam Hussein, and that is why they give away food not just to the needy, but also to those that have been taking part in the processions.
Cooking for a large crowd is very difficult, but we enjoy serving the lovers of Imam Hussein. It's an honor. Today we served about 3,500 meals.
The positive vibes that we get on this day is simply incomparable to any other experience.
The mourning rituals of Tasua and Ashura are considered an important part of Iranian culture, mostly because of the opportunity to reflect on Imam Hussein's values, his way of life, and what he stood up for. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
The Secretary General of Hezbollah has promised that the Lebanese resistance movement will defend the country against any aggression by Israel and will continue to support Palestinians in their fight against the Tel Aviv regime. Mariam Saleh has a report from Beirut.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah warned Israel Saturday against committing any mistakes or foolish acts.
The enemy is still occupying a part of our land in the Sheba Farms and the Kafar Shuba Hills, and over the past week, it reoccupied a part of the Qajar village. It's provoking, violating, and occupying territory while very insolently talking about what it calls provocations of the resistance on the border with occupied Palestine. From here, I warn the Israelis against any foolishness or wrong choices. The courageous and honorable resistance front in Lebanon will not be lenient and will not give up its responsibilities, neither in protection nor in deterrence and liberation.
The leader of the resistance movement was speaking in a televised address in Lebanon, marking the holy day of Ashura. He reiterated that the desecration of the Quran in Sweden and Denmark is intolerable by all Muslims, calling on the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and all Muslim states to take a firm stance, or else the Muslim youth will have to take the courageous step of punishing those who have committed abusive acts against the holy book of Islam. Hundreds of thousands commemorated the martyrdom of Imam Hussein across the country, and they pledged their allegiance to Imam Hussein. They also stress that the teachings of Ashura are not limited to a historic event.
This is a struggle between the right and wrong. And Imam Hussein teaches us how to defend against the injustice and how to defend the oppressed people around the world. He is a universal leader. And now we are here to renew the pledge for Imam Hussein.
Today, on the 10th of Muharram, we will tell our leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah that even if they kill us, we will be with him. They wanted to starve the supporters of resistance, but now on Ashura, you see people from all sects in Lebanon coming to take food distributed as voting offerings. No matter how much they conspire against us, we will continue to vow that we are with Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah.
Sayyid Nasrallah also expressed Hezbollah's total support for the Palestinian people's struggles. He also called for the lifting of the cruel blockades imposed on Yemen and Syria.
The yearly processions held by Hezbollah supporters are a manifestation of their unwavering belief that Karbala is not merely a political school of thought, but also a call to all humanity to strive for the establishment of justice and peace on earth. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Tehran court has named some 100 fugitive members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen-e-Khalq terrorist organization as defendants in case to stand trial. In a public announcement, the criminal court also called on defendants to introduce attorneys to represent them during the trial. An indictment has already been issued against the defendants, who include Masoud and Maryam Rajavi, two senior members of the terrorist group. The MEK has conducted numerous acts of terror against both officials and ordinary people, killing large numbers. The terrorist group was also a key ally of the former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein's regime. Train passengers in Britain facing another day of disruption. The country's rail network is hit by fresh industrial action over pay and working conditions. 20,000 train crews at 14 rail companies have walked out of their jobs. Train managers, station staff, and guards are among the strikers. The operators are based in England, but the stoppage will affect cross-border trains to and from Scotland and Wales. Passengers have been warned to check timetables before travel, as large areas of the rail network are expected to have little or no service. The 24-hour strike could disrupt family holiday travel amid the six-week school break. This is the third walkout in 9 days that hit Britain's rail network. The country has seen similar strikes across other sectors in recent months. A two-day Russia-Africa summit has been held in St. Petersburg with 49 countries in attendance. Marina Kortanova reports.
Multipolar world and invasive security were the main headlines of the talks that Russian President Vladimir Putin held with African leaders. Other issues were also discussed in the summit, including the food security. Withdrawal from the grain deal with Ukraine will allow Russia to accelerate the research of relations with African states. The food issue is exactly what the authorities can cling on to restore the ties lost after the collapse of the USSR. Representatives of African countries see Russia as a reliable partner, and thanks to this, Moscow has a good chance to firmly gain a foothold on the continent again. Putin has repeatedly stressed that Russia is ready to work together, hand in hand with African friends, to work for the future, to build a truly strategic interaction and partnership.
In the coming months, in the next 3 to 4 months, we'll be ready to provide Burkina Faso, Zimbabwe, Mali, Somalia, the Central African Republic, Eritrea, with 50,000 tons of grain and fertilizer free of charge, and we will also provide free delivery of these products to consumers.
Moscow has once again written off $23 billion as part of African debt relief, implementing energy projects in 30 African countries, and is ready to settle accounts with African countries in national currencies. The descendants of prominent African leaders announced the creation of the Pan-African Anti-Colonial Legacy Forum. Among them are the descendants of Nelson Mandela, Gamal Abdel Nasser, Ahmed Ben Bella, Julius Nyerere, Samora Machel. New branches of Russian universities will be opened in Africa together with the enrollment increase of African students in Russian universities.
Russia has delayed its return to Africa. We should have done this earlier, especially since Moscow has such a good heritage in Africa. In Soviet times, Moscow has always supported liberation movements in Africa, supported humanitarian and economically. The USSR built a lot in Africa, developed a huge number of projects. After the USSR collapse, Russia was deceived in its choice of a pro-Western vector. The result is the expansion of NATO countries by the border. Moscow is once again resuming its relations with Africa countries when the grain deal is completed and African countries again need Russia's help.
The Russia-Africa summit was attended by representatives of those countries that are fed up with the Western approach and presented the majority of the African continent.
With Russia's strong return to Africa, the continent's leaders saw an opportunity to completely get rid of Western colonialism. They can also now tap into their natural resources and benefit from Russian experience in various fields such as security, agriculture and energy to fuel the growth of their countries. Marina Kartanova, Moscow.
North Korea has marked Armistice Day, or Victory Day as it calls it. Of note was the participation of Russia and Chinese delegations. The North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, also made sure to display his country's military arsenal, including nuclear-capable missiles. And that was regarded as a direct message to its adversary, the U.S.
It's the 70th anniversary of the end of the Korean War, called Armistice Day, a day celebrated in North Korea as Victory Day. Like previous years, a parade and a display of North Korea's military might, like these missiles. What makes this Victory Day different is the large presence of two delegations, Russia and China. While the Russian president was hosting the African summit, he has sent his top defense official for the Victory Day celebrations in North Korea. The Russian delegation was headed by Russia's defense minister, Sergei Shoigu. Why is that significant? This was the first by Moscow's top defense official since the 1991 breakup of the Soviet Union. Putin wanted to make sure the Russian and North Korean unity was on display through his top defense official. Their appearance at events with the North's nuclear missiles and with the Chinese and Russian support marked a contrast with previous years. In the past, Beijing and Moscow distanced themselves from North Korea's nuclear weapons and ballistic missile development. But not this year. Quite the opposite. The North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is seen here, giving Shoigu and the Russian delegation a personal tour of the North's ballistic missiles. Other images showed what analysts said was a new North Korean drone. Even though the missiles are banned under UN Security Council resolutions adopted with Russian and Chinese support, this visit showed solidarity by the three countries, united in their stance against the U.S., especially when it came to the Ukraine war.
North Korea is among a handful of countries that the U.S. has pushed to alienate, along with Russia, China, and Iran, but all of these countries have, in their own capacity, fought back against the U.S. aggression. The Russian and Chinese presence in North Korea spells a major challenge to the U.S., which is engaged in multiple war scenarios involving these countries.
The Russian and Chinese presence on this armistice anniversary has given Pyongyang the chance to highlight the close relationship that North Korea has with Russia and with China. And it also serves as a reminder of their close military cooperation during the Korean War. Back then, North Korean troops fought with Chinese and Russian support against the U.S.-led alliance. Currently, there are multiple war scenarios that are at play in the world. First, the Ukraine war. Then comes confrontation between the U.S. and North Korea. The U.S. is also provoking China in the South China Sea. And there are even skirmishes between the U.S. and Russia when it comes to Syria. This unity between North Korea, Russia, and China, therefore, is significant in the message that it sends to the U.S., the country common in all of these conflicts. Let's not forget that Russia and China have held military drills in the past, the most recent one in the south of Japan. It was the first time that Russia dispatched both naval and air forces to participate. Putin's decision to send Shoigu to North Korea may also indicate Russia's need for missiles to support its war in Ukraine. The Russian president has not been shy about openly saying that it is running low on some weapons. The military alliance of Russia, North Korea, and China is also not limited to these countries alone. Iran has also participated in military drills with China and with Russia. And this points to the New World Order, one which aims to break the U.S. military aggression and provocations as the world hegemon from Europe to Asia.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Researchers say as COVID-19 cases rose, so did diabetes, and no one knows why. The spike in childhood type 1 diabetes opened new avenues for researchers to explore the cause of the disease. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The scientific publication Nature wrote a study of more than 38,000 young people have confirmed what researchers had begun to suspect. The COVID-19 pandemic precipitated a jump in cases of type 1 diabetes in children and teenagers. At first, researchers thought that the rise was caused by the virus itself, but it turns out that is probably not true. Nevertheless, with the overall cause of type 1 diabetes is still a mystery, the findings offer new mechanisms for researchers to explore. This study, published on June 30 in JAMA Network Open, pulled data from 17 previous studies and found that the incidence of type 1 diabetes in children and teenagers under 19 years old was about 14% higher during 2020. The first year of the pandemic than in the previous year. The incidence rose higher still in the second year of the pandemic, up 27% from 2019. It was a much higher incidence than we expected, says senior author Razel Shalman, a pediatric endocrinologist at Six Kids Research Institute in Toronto, Canada. Before COVID-19, the incidence of type 1 diabetes in children was rising at a steady rate of around 2 to 4% a year. Clemence Camart, a diabetes researcher at Justus Liebert University in Germany, said, "Now, all of a sudden, we see a tenfold increase. This is definitely a significant jump, to an extent and at a speed not thought possible." Type 1 diabetes occurs when the body's own immune system attacks cells in pancreas that produce insulin, which regulates blood sugar levels. As a result, blood sugar levels can seesaw dangerously. Over the long term, this can damage people's blood vessels, which in turn can lead to blindness, kidney failure, heart attacks, or nerve damage that, in the worst cases, requires limb amputation. Researchers first raised concerns that COVID-19 might trigger type 1 diabetes after observing an upswing in new cases in multiple countries in the pandemic's early months. Other research has also recorded a surge in new diagnoses of diabetes several months after a COVID-19 wave has peaked. Yet, numerous studies struggled to find evidence that SARS-CoV-2 was triggering the surge or substantially harming the pancreatic cells. Shulman and her colleagues restricted their analysis to studies that had at least 12 months of data before and during the pandemic. They also included only those that reported the size of the population studied, not just case numbers. So, she said, we could truly know if there was an increase in the incidence. In addition to confirming that the incidence of type 1 diabetes in children rose during the first 2 years of the pandemic, they also found that the pandemic disrupted the seasonality of childhood type 1 diabetes. The illness usually follows clear seasonal patterns, with higher rates of new cases in winter than in summer months. By contrast, the team was not able to analyze rates of type 2 diabetes in children because they weren't many studies with enough data. Type 2 diabetes develops when the pancreas doesn't produce enough insulin and when the body stops responding to it. Inactivity and obesity are risk factors. The meta-analysis did reaffirm that children diagnosed with type 1 diabetes tended to present with more severe forms of disease during the pandemic than before. the incidence of diabetic ketoacidosis, a potentially life-threatening complication of new-onset type 1 diabetes, rose by 26% from 2019 to 2020, probably because people were hesitant or unable to seek emergency care when early symptoms appeared. Diabetic ketoacidosis is preventable but has lasting effects if it does occur, so that's actually one of the most important findings from this study. It is still unclear what triggered the sudden increase in diabetes and how long the trend might persist. Longer-term studies are needed to see whether the incidence plateaus, falls, or increases further, agrees Satish, an epidemiologist studying diabetes at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. But other researchers are not fully convinced by the findings. Lars Sten, an epidemiologist studying risk factors for type 1 diabetes at Norwegian Institute of Public Health in Oslo, says a 14% jump in incidence in just 1 year sounds implausible to me. He says the incidence of the condition fluctuates a lot year to year anyway, and tenfold differences in incidence exist between the countries studied. As for underlying causes, Kamart, who wrote an invited commentary on the meta-analysis, says it now seems rather unlikely that SARS-CoV-2 is directly damaging pancreatic cells in children. Studies from Finland, Scotland, and Denmark could not directly link coronavirus infections to the increase in type 1 diabetes. If the parallel pandemic of diabetes is not caused by the virus wiping out pancreatic cells, Shulman says, it opens up an opportunity for researchers to investigate other factors that might be driving the decades-long rise in childhood diabetes. Some researchers say the most probable explanation is that the immune system's attack on the pancreas is triggered by a COVID-19 infection, which happens with other infections as well, like enteroviruses and hepatitis B. He notes that the prevalence of a form of type 1 diabetes that develops without the immune system generating antibodies against people's own cells has not changed during the pandemic. This suggests that the jump in youth type 1 diabetes is attributable to an increase in autoimmune attacks brought about by environmental or lifestyle changes. It could be that the pandemic hastened the onset of type 1 diabetes in children already at risk, or that, for reasons unknown, more children are developing autoimmunity than before the pandemic. Lockdowns and physical distancing might have reduced kids' exposure to respiratory viruses other than COVID-19, inadvertently removing some unknown protective effect. Researchers are exploring other possible triggers, including diets rich in highly processed food, weight gain, and changes in the immune-influencing microorganisms that live in the gut. Diets are changing. Obesity is increasing. Researchers say, particularly in low- and middle-income countries such as Bangladesh or India, where childhood diabetes burden was rising long before the pandemic. So, there is no single answer for this.
We try to get close to whom Imam al-Hussein actually is.
Verily, in the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, there is a warmth in the hearts of the believers
that will never cool off.
Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees that the evil system is starting to institutionalize itself.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
Ya Abu Abdullah, Ya Mawla, what happened in Karbala? What had you done to deserve this treatment? Ya Mawla, Ya Aba Abdullah, what had you done that they were so adamant not only to not allow you to have any water? They didn't allow the young children to have any water. They didn't allow your flag bearer to deliver just a bit of water. Ya Hussein, يا فاطمة الزهراء I'm sure you were in Karbala How did you watch Hussein hold Ali al-Asghar above his head asking for water and getting an arrow as a response? Ya Zahra, how did you watch Zainab come out on Tal al-Zainabiyya and see Ash-Shimr jalisun ala sadrin? I'm sure you were in Karbala. Some have said after Abbas went to the Sharia, when he was trying to get water for the children, when he entered the Sharia, imagine Abbas having been fighting for an entire day without water in the heat of Karbala. I don't know if you've experienced extreme thirst or not. Once you feel the coolness of water, your urge to have water is more. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas entered the Sharia. His feet probably touch the water. He feels the coolness of the water. He grabs some in his hands. He raises it. His hands feel the cool as well. فذكر عطش الحسين. He remembers the thirst of Imam al-Hussein. He pours it back, moves towards the tents of Imam al-Hussein. The lady Fatima al-Zahra was in Karbala. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas moves towards the tents. They ambush him. The lady Fatima al-Zahra is watching Bunayya. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas begins to fight, hoping to get the water to the tents for the children. A mal'oon strikes his right arm from the back. Wallahi in qata'atumu yamini, inni uhami abadan an dini. Imagine Abbas holding the water skin with his teeth, fighting with his left arm. Another mal'oon from the rear. Fatima is watching. His arm is severed, trying to get the horse to go faster towards the tents. But the mal'oon, they start shooting arrows. One of the arrows pierces through the water skin. Abbas sees the water. It's spilling. There's no more hope for the water to reach the tents. He changes direction, they say. I don't want to move towards the tents anymore. I promised the children water. But he continues to go. Another mal'oon takes an iron rod, again from the rear, on the head of Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas is to fall. When you want to fall from an elevation, if you are to fall from any elevation, even when you're standing, you use your arms to break your fall. But Abbas has no arms. Fatima al-Zahra is there, they sing. She broke his fall. Perhaps for this reason he calls, Ya Akha, Adrik Akha. Ya Hussein, Ruhi Fadak. Arriving on the armless body of Abbas. How can I help? Abbas says, can you remove some of that blood in my eye? I want to see you one last time. Ruhi fidaka ya Mawla. Has been recorded to have said, Al-an inkasara dhahri. At this point, my back was broken. Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimin. Wa sayalamu al-nazina zalamu ayyamun qalabin yanqalibun. Ya Hussein.
How can I forget the burning of tents? Cries that will rock my heart, leaving my soul torn apart. Can Hussein be left alone? Battlefield, can Hussein be left?
this battlefield.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The Justice Department on Monday, 24th of July, sued Texas Governor Greg Abbott over a newly installed floating barrier on the Rio Grande that is meant to stop migrants from crossing into the United States from Mexico. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. The Biden administration on Monday, 24th of July, filed a lawsuit against Texas over floating barriers that state officials have deployed in the middle of the Rio Grande, seeking to force the state to remove the buoys that federal officials argue have endangered migrants and Border Patrol agents alike. The Justice Department's 9-page lawsuit, filed in the federal district court in Austin, Texas, said Texas officials were required to request and obtain permission from the federal government before assembling the barriers which were put in place earlier this month. The River Buoys, the department argued, violate a long-standing federal law that governs structures in navigable waterways. The lawsuit asked the court to direct Texas to remove the existing river buoys and to block the state from setting up similar barriers in the future. We allege that Texas has flouted federal law by installing a barrier in the Rio Grande without obtaining the required federal authorization, Associate Attorney General Vanita Gupta said in a statement. This floating barrier poses threats to navigation and public safety and presents humanitarian concerns. Additionally, the presence of the floating barrier has prompted diplomatic protests by Mexico and risked damaging U.S. foreign policy. The Biden administration last week said Texas could avoid a lawsuit if it agreed to remove the buoys. On Monday, however, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, a Republican and vocal critic of the administration, defended the legality of his state's actions and welcomed a legal battle. "See you in court, Mr. President," Abbott said. Monday's lawsuit marks an escalation on a political showdown between the Biden administration and Governor Greg Abbott over how the federal government has managed high levels of unauthorized crossings at the U.S. southern border with Mexico since President Biden took office in 2021. The floating barriers are part of a larger multi-billion-dollar initiative authorized by Texas Governor Greg Abbott, known as Operation Lone Star, that has raised humanitarian and legal concerns relating to the treatment of migrants. Governor Greg Abbott and other state officials have touted the operation as necessary to reduce illegal border crossings, saying the Biden administration has not done enough to deter migration to the United States. As part of Abbott's operation, Texas officials and members of the National Guard have been instructed to deter migrants from crossing into the United States by setting up razor wire on the riverbanks of the Rio Grande and to arrest migrant adults on state trespassing charges. The state has also transported more than 27,000 migrants to Chicago, Illinois, Denver, Colorado, Los Angeles, California, New York City, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. to protest sanctuary city policies that limit local cooperation with federal deportation agents. While Governor Greg Abbott has tied his state's actions to the record levels of migrant apprehensions reported over the past 2 years, unlawful crossings along the U.S.-Mexico border have recently plummeted. In June, the number of migrants apprehended by Border Patrol agents after crossing the southern border without authorization fell to just under 100,000, a sharp drop from May and the lowest level since the start of President Biden's tenure, according to federal statistics. The decrease in unlawful crossings came after the Biden administration enacted stricter asylum rules for those who enter the country illegally and expanded efforts to direct migrants to programs that allow them to come to the United States legally. While Operation Lone Star has faced criticism from migrant advocates and the Biden administration since it began in March of 2021, the initiative recently came under internal scrutiny after a Texas state trooper and a medic expressed concerns about state actions placing migrants in harm's way. The medic's allegations included reports of migrant children and pregnant women being cut by razor wire assembled by state officials. He also reported concerns about the river barriers forcing migrants to cross the Rio Grande in more dangerous parts of the river where they can drown. The Texas Department of Public Safety announced an internal investigation into the medic's allegations, but has denied his accounts of state officials directing troopers to withhold water from migrants and to physically push them back into the Rio Grande. The website of Voice of America, voanews.com, has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Justice Department on Monday, 24th of July, sued Texas Governor Greg Abbott over a newly installed floating barrier on the Rio Grande, that is the Republicans' latest tactic to try stopping migrants from crossing into the United States from Mexico. The lawsuit asks a federal judge in Austin, Texas, to force Texas to remove a roughly 1,000-foot or 305-meter line of bright orange wrecking ball-sized buoys that the Biden administration says raises humanitarian and environmental concerns. The lawsuit claims that Texas unlawfully installed the barrier without permission between the border cities of Eagle Pass and Piedras Negras in Mexico. The buoys are the latest escalation of Texas border security operation that also includes razor wire fencing, arresting migrants on trespassing charges, and sending busloads of asylum seekers to Democratic-led cities in other states. Critics have long called into question the effectiveness of the two-year operation known as Operation Lone Star, and a state trooper's account this month of measures injuring migrants has put the mission under intensifying new scrutiny. In anticipation of the lawsuit, Texas Governor Greg Abbott sent President Joe Biden a letter earlier on Monday that defended Texas's right to install the barrier. Governor Greg Abbott accused Biden of putting migrants at risk by not doing more to deter them from making the journey to the United States. "Texas will see you in court, Mr. President," Abbott wrote. The Biden administration has said illegal border crossings have declined significantly since new immigration restrictions took effect in May. In June, the first full month since the new policies took effect, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, the CBP, said migrant encounters were down 30% from the month prior and were at the lowest level since Biden's first full month in office. White House's Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre told reporters that Governor Greg Abbott's policies as a whole have made it difficult for U.S. Border Patrol agents to access the Rio Grande. "Those are unlawful actions that are not helpful and is undermining what the president has put forward and is trying to do," Karine Jean-Pierre said. In a letter last week, the Justice Department gave Texas until Monday, 24th of July, to commit to removing the barrier or face a lawsuit. The letter said the buoy wall poses a risk to navigation as well as a risk to public safety in the Rio Grande River, and it presents humanitarian concerns. The state deployed the buoys without notifying the International Boundary and Water Commission of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Mexico's Secretary of State asked the federal government to intervene, saying the barrier violates international treaties. The lawsuit is not the first time that the Biden administration has sued Texas over its actions on the border with Mexico. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland in 2021 accused the state of usurping and even interfering with the federal government's responsibility to enforce immigration laws after Governor Greg Abbott empowered state troopers to stop vehicles carrying migrants on the basis that they could increase the spread of COVID-19.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The viewpoints of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the tragedy of Karbala. What Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam did was extraordinary feats. That is to say, the dimensions of his actions are far more than what we estimate. We usually ignore aspects and details. Once, I spoke about Imam al-Hussein's alayhi salam patience. His patience was not limited to enduring thirst or seeing his companions being killed. These things are relatively easy to tolerate. The kind of patience that is difficult to practice is to listen to influential, aware, and respectable people who keep creating doubts and telling you that what you are doing is dangerous and wrong. But who did those things? People like Abdullah al-Jafar, Abdullah Zubair, and Abdullah al-Abbas. These prominent figures of that time were constantly telling Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam not to do what he was doing. If it were somebody else, somebody who did not have that determination and a stable character, he would have thought, well, I did my duty. These people are talking like this and the world is acting like that. So I should just say what I am supposed to say and do nothing else. A person who decides to stand up against such statements, such temptations, such doubts and such efforts to bend Sharia and is not dissuaded from the continuing his path, such a person is the one who can give rise to such a great transformation. In this regard, our magnanimous Imam Khomeini was similar to the Lord of the Martyrs, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. I explained this in another meeting, and I do not want to go into the details now. This was how Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam acted as a guardian.
Ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana latshan.
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
Ana latshan, ana latshan.
Did women also play a role in the event of Ashura? Zainab al-Kubra, salamullah alayha, is a prominent role model in history and shows the significance of a woman's presence in one of the most important events in human history. Blood gained a victory over the sword on the day of Ashura, and Zainab al-Kubra was the cause of that victory. This was because the forces of righteousness were apparently defeated in a military fight in Karbala, but Zainab al-Kubra's behavior was the factor that turned this apparent defeat into a permanent and decisive victory.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.